Can we start with your name and where you were born?
Yes. You want it now?
Mm-hmm.
You have a Selenic? I was born in... There I go. I freeze up. Hardwick, Vermont.
Right. And when did your parents come to Canada?
They came... I don't know the date.
Right.
They came to Canada and went to Vermont.
And what did your father...
No, wait a minute. Yeah, my father and mother, they were born in Canada, around Montreal, Quebec. And then they came to Canada.
Right.
Yeah. They went to Vermont. Let me get it straight. They went to Vermont from Canada.
And then they moved back?
No, they stayed in Vermont. They died in Vermont. Now I got it right. That's wrong there for you. I'm sorry.
It's okay. And what did your dad do?
He was a granite cutter. He had his own shed.
And did you marry?
Yes, I married. I married in Chicago in 1926.
And what did your husband do?
He was working at the Tribune in Chicago. He worked in there for years. And then... Yeah, and then we went on into the Depression then.
So you, is that why you decided to leave the States?
Yeah, we were supposed to come out here to live with his parents.
Right.
We were in the Depression at that time.
And did you have any children?
Yes, I had two children in Chicago. The rest of them were born during the Depression.
So
four.
When did you come to Vancouver?
In 1943.
Right. And... When you got here, did you move to Steveston, to Richmond?
Or? That's where we went right away. It was hard to get a job, to get a place to live then days. Even though you did get a Japanese house, we got a Japanese house to live in.
Right.
See, my husband is here ahead of me. So we found this place.
And did you have farmland around your house?
No.
A garden?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. And what kind of work were you doing around your home? You had children to raise?
I just looked after my children, that's all. Had a little garden, that's all.
Right, and so you did all the housework?
Yes.
What prompted you to get a job, to look for work?
Well, I had a little girl that was sick. In order to give her what we could, I got the job at the cannery. So I'd work during the day, and then I'd go up and see her at night, come home. Finally, she got over it, came home, and I kept her at home for a while. No, no, 9th birthday, she passed away.
How did you find out about jobs in the canneries?
Through my neighbors. Through my neighbors. She knew I was having trouble trying to get to the hospital. I didn't have the money to go to see my little girl. So that's how I started to work in the cannery, to get money to go there.
Right. Was it hard to find a job in those days?
Yes, it was very hard. You couldn't get a job.
Right. And was your husband able to find work?
No, it was hard for him also. And he was a carpenter.
So he had a skilled trade. In
it. That's right.
Right. When you first worked in the canneries, what were the conditions like there? Can you describe it?
Well, seeing that I needed work so bad, I guess I didn't even stop to think the conditions of anything, you know. But I was washing fish and nobody bothering you or anything. And the lady, I knew her pretty well, that got me the job in there. And they, I was a greenhorn about washing fish. And then they used to take you from washing fish onto packing fish in the cans. That's all the trouble I had there then, when I first started.
What were the canneries themselves like physically? Was it cold?
Oh, it was very, very cold, yes. You had cracks in the floor and everything. In the wintertime, you had to stand in buckets in order to keep warm. Your hands would go real cold till they just give a spring to them, you know, heat, and worked like that.
And was the work steady or did you have to wait for the fish to come?
No, sometimes you'd go and sit around for a whole day before the boat would come in. Then the boat wouldn't come in. They'd make you sit around there, no pay, all day long.
How much did you make working there?
I think if you made $65 a week, you was lucky.
Mm-hmm. And was the rate hourly or was it based on how many flats you could?
Well, no, this was all hourly work. It was paid 35 cents an hour. The packers that put the fish in the cans, they were on piecework. That was piecework. I didn't do any of that. Just once in a while if they were short. And I was lucky to make enough to live on there.
And were men and women in the workplace together?
Yes. The men were putting the fish on the tables and that.
Right. So what kind of jobs would men do and what kind of jobs would women do within the canneries?
Well, the men would take and put fish on the table. It would come off the boat on the elevator and run down into great big bins, and they used to take feed the fish from the bin over to the iron chinks, and then it used to come down on the line to the girls. And then they used to have great big bins in back of us. After we washed the fish, it would go into those bins. Then the men used to take them out to the hand fillers.
Right.
Men used to work on retorches, where you used to put the fish where it would cook. Retorch.
Right. And what would women do?
And they wash fish. And then they'd pack it in the cans.
And did the men and the women receive different wages for the work that they did?
The men was different wages than women.
And were they lower or higher?
They weren't too far apart. Mm-hmm. They weren't too far apart. The women that were working on piecework made twice as much as the men.
And were there different races or ethnic groups?
They were mostly, in certain canneries, it depend what cannery you was in. Your BC Packers had mostly Indian women filling cans, packing.
Right. And how about other ethnic groups? Were there Japanese workers or?
Not at that time. They came in. The Japanese didn't come in until, when was it, 40, 67 or something like that, or earlier.
Right. And were there Chinese workers as well?
Oh yes, it was Chinese workers.
And what jobs would they work on?
The Chinese, they used to work on those, on the chinks, the iron chinks. Mm-hmm. And then they used to stand at the end of the line when the fish used to come down, pick the good fish from the bad fish and put them in boxes.
So were different ethnic groups doing different kinds of jobs within the canneries?
Mm-hmm.
And did that mean that there were sort of like pay differences between them?
No, it was all the same pay.
Right. Were there any tensions between the different groups within the canneries? Like sort of tensions around race or?
Just at your BC Packers.
What was that like?
Well, mostly like they didn't want to work by this girl or they didn't want to work by that girl. They didn't like it.
Right.
That's about all.
And was there hostility towards the Japanese women when they came back?
When they came back, there was, yes.
And
they couldn't stand having the Japanese come in and work by them.
How did people deal with that? Like, did you do anything to try and better that situation?
Or? Well, if I knew about it, I used to say something about it, you know, and tell them that they were just as good as they were and they worked the same way.
Yeah.
They had just as much right to work in there as they did.
Okay. So at that time, There was no equal pay for women.
No.
No. Okay. And what was the supervision like within the workplace? Was it heavily supervised? Did they have charge hands?
They had a charge hand. Yeah, she used to come around all the time, watch to see how the girls were doing their work and that, and place the girls where they needed certain girls at certain jobs.
Right.
But they were all the same pay though.
Did people who worked in the plants generally get along fairly well, or were there conflicts between them?
It all depends. It all depends. You get that all over.
Yeah. Okay. And when the women working in the plants, were most of them single or married?
Both. Single and married.
And were they younger women or older? Or?
They were, they were around their 20s on. Except when it was for school. The school kids used to come in and work. Then they'd be about 18, 19.
And did many of them have children?
Everybody that was working had children.
What did they do about taking care of their kids?
Just left them at home, went to work.
Right.
Unless that they had a mother to leave them with or something like that. But you take it BC Packers, they had a place there where they used to look after the children. The people used to come from way up Alert Bay, and they had their bunkhouses and that, and they used to bring the children down with them. And then they used to have somebody looking after them there.
Did the company pay for that, or?
Yes, the company paid for that.
Was that after people were unionized, or?
Before. Mm. Before.
And did you work once you had married? You were working after you were married.
Right? Yes.
And it was, once you began to work, and your child was in the hospital, why did you continue to work? Because he needed the money?
Needed the money. My husband wasn't working steady then either. Mm. He was a carpenter, but he used to have to go out of town and that, maybe be gone for a month or two, and that's all. There wasn't enough money to live on.
And how did your husband feel about you working?
Well, he couldn't do much about it.
How about your family? Did your family pretty well accept women going out to get jobs?
Never was said too much about it around there. Because there was a woman also across the street was doing the same thing. She had to go out to work too. Her husband was a carpenter.
So the community generally accepted that if women could find jobs, it was all right?
Yes.
Okay. And what did you do in terms of child care? Did you have a babysitter? Or?
I used to send my children out to some friends to look after the kids for me. I had two little girls that were still young, not going to school. And I used to send them over to a friend of mine to look after, and I used to pay her so much.
Right. And when would you do your housework?
After I come home from work.
So you would work all day and do your housework and take care of your kids?
Mm-hmm. And those days they didn't have the things to work with that they do today. We used to have to scrub on the scrub board and boil your clothes and that. It'd be 12 o'clock before you went to bed.
And then you'd have to get up?
6 o'clock the next morning and go to work.
So were you tired a lot?
I was tired, but I kept on going.
Okay. And did most of your friends work in the fish industry?
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes, they all worked in the fishing industry. After, you know, they came out there, and then you got acquainted with the people that were in there, knew all the people in the community. Like.
So what job did you have when you first became active within the trade union movement?
What did I have?
Yeah, what work were you doing and how did you become active within
the union? I was working in the cannery. And I was a charge hand for about 6 months until the people got after me and wanted me to start the union going. And I was trying to get them to go ahead and do it because they had more education than I did, you see. They were, no, you couldn't get them going. So every morning I come in, Eva, what are we going to do today? You're going to have the union in today? I says, well, it all depends. I don't know. I said, what's the matter with you? Well, we can't do it. Why? I got too much to do. I says, I've got children to look after, too. So finally, I got in there and started, talked to the girls. I told them if they wanted me to start a union, they'd have to do what I tell them to do. They says, fine. I says, well, I says, I'll go and call up the business agent, see if he'll come down and organize this. And I got all the girls together. Finally, I went out after the work was all done. We went out on the Fisherman's Wharf and organized. Owen Stevens and Ellie Gordon came down. We elected our shop stewards. The next day, we come in with our buttons on, and the forelady says to the foreman, look, those girls have got into the union last night. He said, yeah, what are you going to do about it?
So that's it. That's it, eh? And what the people looked to you to organize, why was that? Was it because you had been pretty vocal about conditions within the canneries?
Oh, I used to holler about the conditions that were in there. I used to holler about the way they used to have to wash fish, and then the forelady would come around and holler at them the way she did instead of talking human to them. She says, I wouldn't take it.
And
you used to have to keep up a certain space in washing fish. She used to be behind you. You can't do that well. She'd go and put you off someplace else. If you can't do that, she'll put you someplace else, and then out you go. She wouldn't keep you.
So were there issues around hiring and firing that the union took up immediately? Are there any examples of that?
Oh, yes. I had them, but I haven't got them now.
How about you had given an example of a woman who was fired without just cause?
Oh, yes. That was, we had had a meeting in the lunchroom. And this girl spoke up and she says, yes. She says, I've got a beef. She says, what can you do? She says, when they start pushing you around. So after that, the forelady got after her and asked her why she brought that up after the meeting. And she says, who's been kicking you around? She says, you. And she says, why? She says, well, she says, you said that I took and cheated on my boxes for my punches. And she says, somebody, and she says, I think it was you, that put the fish there on that board, an extra fish, for me to get an extra punch. She says, I didn't do it. So finally, we went to management about it. And the management, I had the shop stewards and all up there to try and discuss this. And Les Ashton says to me, he says, you know, Eva, he says, this isn't the first time this has happened. I says, it is this time. I says, this is unjust. And he asked each one of them what they thought about it, except that one that I told you that was kicked out of the union. Right. She stuck with the company with that. She says, well, she says, are people going to cheat like that? She says, I'm not staying here to talk about it. She says, okay, she says, everybody can go, except you, Eva. She says, you're going to stay here till you see things my way. And we were getting paid by the hour. So I lost about 3 or 4 hours pay that day.
So stewards wouldn't be paid when they were on union duty?
No, I was... No, they weren't paid. They were after a while.
Right.
After, it was about the following year after we fought for that they should get paid if they go on, you know, meet with the company with beefs and stuff like that. They shouldn't have to lose their pay. So they used to pay us.
So how was it resolved?
No, it wasn't resolved. She was kicked out. Couldn't do anything about it.
Right. Okay. And were there people there who were trying to undermine the union, like this one woman you mentioned?
That was the only one. Right. That was the only one.
What kind of things would she do?
You drew something around there and she'd come and say it wasn't right and this and that, and then the company would tell you to go to work.
And this meeting that you mentioned, did the workers meet with management regularly to talk about production or?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We'd go meet with the company once a month. We had our regular meeting once a month with the company. We'd be about 10 shop stewards that would meet.
Right. And you would, at that time, present grievances?
Yeah, we had papers and everything. And the next time they'd have it on paper so that we could hang it up in the cannery and show the membership what we had gone through.
You began to work during the war. Were there any changes during the period of the Second World War in terms of working conditions or any effect of the war on your job and unionization? So how long did it take to get the union in completely?
It took, I started in 44 to get the union in, and I got it in there in 46.
And by then it was in?
It was in pretty tight.
Right.
Pretty tight then.
And you found out about trade unions mostly through the women on your shop floor who pushed you?
Yeah.
How about your husband? Was he at all?
Well, he was talking about it. They went to see him about me organizing and that they'd give me a job. Like, it was okay with him.
Right.
Yeah, he thought it would be a good experience for me.
And he had been sympathetic to the Fishermen's Union before.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
when the union started, I should tell you this. When I started with the union, we had to have a great big regular meeting to elect our shop stewards and also our executive board. And we did, and we happened to get people from each one of the plant to represent the union from each one of these plants. Mm-hmm. And you tried to get somebody on the board there, and you just couldn't do it. We had to draw up our bylaws, so we were trying to get a committee to do that. So finally, there was a little fellow that was in there, and he says to me, he says, are you going to vote for yourself? If you don't, he says, we're out. I says, no, I'm not going to vote for myself. I said, I'll vote for you. He says, okay. He says, you vote for me then. He says, we'll see what we can do. Finally, he went and voted for me, and I got in, so I couldn't get out of it.
So you were then on the executive?
I was on the executive board. We had a meeting at my house.
Right. And was the community you lived in, was Stevenson pretty pro-union?
No. They didn't, it was mixed up, like, you know. Some of them figured you're doing the wrong thing by having the union here, and others, you know, it all depends who was in there. You had a lot of these Ukrainian peoples as well. They used to push, they're quite labor people. Mm-hmm. They used to push to get the union in there as well. And the fishermen, you had quite a few of the fishermen there that belonged right in Steveston. They wouldn't even listen. They wouldn't even think of a union. Mm. And finally they kept having meetings there and everything. Finally we got all the boys in.
Right.
I went to, you couldn't even get them at the meeting. Even Homer said to me, he says, I don't know. He says, you certainly have started something. He says, those guys are going to the meetings all the time. He says, you get a full hall. He says, why is that? I said, because I go to the meetings. I go up along the wharf and I tell the boys that there's a meeting and they should be down at the meetings.
So you'd pull them out to the
meetings? I'd pull them out to the meetings.
Right. Was the issue of the union and the fact that it was being organized something that people talked about a lot in the community and debated, or mostly at work?
It was mostly at work, and then the fishermen used to talk a lot about it.
Right.
Yeah. But the shore workers, you know, I think what started it would be the fishermen's wives, where the fisherman was in the union. That's where it started. Because if their husband is in the union, they wanted also a union in the plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it started all.
Did, once you became active within the union, did management's attitude towards you change at all?
He didn't have no use for me. He did everything he could. Even the foremans and the charge hand used to do things and watch. I used to have to watch my step, every little step I made. I didn't dare to talk to my neighbor next door to me while we were working. If I did, right away they'd figure I was talking union, and that was it.
So they kind of tried to get rid of you?
Yeah. They couldn't. And then on top of that, they tried to say that I wasn't doing my work. Then Tommy Parkins came in and tried to back him up on it, because there was a guy that came in to try to teach these girls how to fillet soles.
Right.
And the first thing he did, he came to me on the soles, and he wanted me to see how I was filleting soles. And he says, you're okay. He says, you're doing a wonderful job. Keep it up. But they were trying to say that I wasn't doing my job, so they made Ken Fraser back up on that.
And Ken Fraser was the head of the
canneries.
Canneries, okay. Right. And had you been a member of any other union before?
No.
No. This was your first experience.
Yeah.
And you were active in organizing. What kind of work would you do as an organizer? How would you talk people into joining the union?
Well, I'd ask them first if they belonged to the union, and he says, why? I says, well, I'm here, I says, to see what I can do for you. I says, if you want to join, I'll sign you up. And he says, well, we're not interested. I says, why? Because it's a communist union. I says, what? He says, it's a communist union. I says, well, what if it is? I says, who do you say that's a communist? Homer. I says, well, I says, he's doing a damn good job then, isn't he? I says, after all, I says, where are all people working? And I says, after all, I says, look at the money that you're getting for your fish and everything. I said, did you get that through the company or did you get it through the union? Well, sure, the union fought for it. I said, yes. I says, well, therefore, I said, you're riding on the other guy's back, huh? I said, why in the heck don't you get in there with the rest of them? I says, I'm secretary here for the fishermen's credit, for the fishermen's union. And I says, I've been looking at the books, and I says, I'm trying to sign the people that have kind of gone back on their dues. Well, he got in there with me. And that's how I started signing up all the different men in there.
Right.
Sometimes some of them would run away. They'd see me coming. They'd run away, and then finally they'd come to me after.
And did you become a paid organizer?
Yes.
Okay. So what would your work be as a paid organizer? What would you do?
Just signing up the members and going down and reporting what I've done in that.
Right. So did you ever go onto the boats?
Oh, yes. I was jumping up on the big boats and everything, seeing that they were cleared. Everybody was in the union.
And did you ever have any problems on the boats with...
Sometimes you'd get a problem with the men. They'd get kind of huffy with you. And then they'd finally sign up because they knew they couldn't leave unless that they were cleared.
Right. So they would pretty well... It was like a closed shop or something?
Yeah.
Like that. Okay. And did they ever threaten you or anything like that?
I had some of the fishermen that threatened me to get off the boat. But they'd take a hammer at me. This guy, I don't think he's in the union today, that did that.
So there are people who are like really resistant to...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And in terms of organizing the canneries, what would you do there? Would you go around into the canneries and talk to women there? Or?
During my lunch hour, many days, I went without lunch just signing up members in the union.
Mm. When you were a paid organizer, would you go from cannery to cannery?
Yeah. That's the only way you could organize them.
Well, did you ever have any problems being able to talk to people there?
No, not too much, no.
Management wouldn't interfere to that?
No. As long as I wasn't interfering with the people that were working, that was fine.
Right. Okay.
In fact, the union fought for me to get in there, into the cannery, to sign up members as an organizer.
When the... When you began to organize in your first plant, did you set up any kind of organizing committee or try and do that? Or did you mostly do it yourself?
I did it myself.
What kind of skills did you need to organize?
I don't think you needed any, huh? I didn't even have the education to do it. I just did what I thought was right.
Except that you needed a certain amount of guts to be able to...
That's about all.
Okay, did you ever organize men who were cannery workers?
Oh, yes. I organized all these men that were working in the cannery. No trouble. I used to go in and organize the Chinese guys, too. Some of them wouldn't want to join. Then finally the other guy talked to him in Chinese, and then finally he'd sign up with me.
So would you go into the bunkhouses?
I'd go into the bunkhouse, find them on the top. Oh, that was fun.
Did management ever react to you doing that?
He did towards the last. He did towards the last because the bunkhouse was right next door to the office, and I went in there. And the guys told me to come in. The 2-3 of the guys wanted to join, and I went in there. Ken Fraser came after me about it. I told him, go to hell. Then he called me in his office, wanting to know why I did it.
And, did you ever have newsletters or leaflets or public meetings to help you organize?
Oh, yes, we used to get them, yes.
So would those be regularly? Or?
Every once a month we'd get those, once a month. And after meetings and everything like that, we had letters to know what went on in the meetings and all that. And it used to go around to the plant. We used to hang them in the plants to let them know just what we were doing.
So, and do you think that was important to have like a real system of communication going
on? I do. I do.
To people.
I do.
Did that help them feel involved in the union?
Yes, yes. Okay. And it was also like the fishermen. As soon as we got them shop stewards in there on the boats for each plant, mm-hmm. It meant an awful lot because all I had to do was just go and see the shop steward and tell him that there was a meeting or anything that was going on. I'd go and tell him, and he'd tell his gang that he's around. He'd tell them they'd all be down at the meeting without any trouble.
So were people very active in the union?
Some of them were, because
yeah.
It's a big union. Yeah, Japanese people, I never had too much trouble with organizing them at all. They were very good in signing up.
Mm. Did you work in, what plants did you work in? You mentioned working in Canada Fish at some time.
I worked at the Canadian Fish. That was when I first started to work in 1943. In 1944, I went to the Canadian Fish, and I worked there for 4 or 5 months, and they were closing down, and then I went to the Canadian Fish doing some herring, and on the line, these people were being paid by the hour, not by the hour, piecework,
mm-hmm.
And I went in there to work, but you couldn't get no fish to work with, so I just quit, went back to Imperial the next day.
Is that because the competition was so heavy?
That's right.
And is that a result of piecework?
Yes.
So, What other kinds of things would be a problem around organizing? Would you need people to help you with language or translation?
Well, when I got into a tight spot where people didn't understand or I didn't understand them, I'd get somebody that could talk their language to talk to me.
Right.
And talk to them.
And were there any groups who were particularly sort of opposed to unionization?
Well, you had your Mennonites, you had your Jehovah's, and the, what's that other one? Mennonite, Jehovah, and
The Hindus?
The Hindus at first.
So was that on religious grounds, or that they refused?
Yeah, on religious.
Did you ever get any of them finally involved in the union?
Oh, yes. I got quite a few that joined. I had one girl that she used to come over and see me quite often, and she'd tell me that so-and-so will get into the union and that. And then I'd go and I'd sign them up.
So the sort of the Mennonite community itself, the people who are supportive of unions, kind of convinced each other that they should join in.
Right, right.
And were there many Native people who were involved in the union?
They weren't at first until their organization went. There was no more organization as far as your Indian people. The Native Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened there, but there was no more Native Brotherhood. So then I heard that among the girls that were working. So I figured, well, I'm going to see what I can do organizing them. And I went and spoke to one that was a great friend of ours, Mrs. Esu. And she says, well, she says, we've got no organization, she says. I said, do you want to join? Oh, yes, she says, I'll join. She says, you go and ask the rest of them, they'll join. So as soon as the business agent, Williams, heard about it, is that his name? Heard about it, then he came after me and raised hallelujah because I was signing up his people into the union. So I told him, I says, your organization is not a union. Your organization is more of a, what do you call it?
Well, sort of,
it's not a union, it's an organization anyway.
Yeah.
You belong to, like with me, I belong to a certain thing in the Catholic Church, and I said, that's what it is. He says, we're in the union. I said, you're not in the union until you belong to it. I said, you haven't signed into the union. I said, you're a business agent. Well, he said, that's a union. I said, no, it isn't. I said, it's an organization like a Catholic organization or anything of the kind. So after that, he left me alone. Guy Williams, he was the business agent of
Brotherhood. Right. And did this sort of conflict between the Brotherhood and the Fishermen's Union create confusion amongst people?
No, they belonged to it. His wife was one of the first ones that joined the Fishermen's Union.
Was there any discussion within the Fishermen's Union at all about sort of the conditions that Native people face generally?
No.
Okay. If the union was in a strike situation, did it publish strike bulletins? Or?
Yes. Oh, yes. Every day there was something going around, bulletins and everything. Mm-hmm. And even what was going on, we'd call meetings. We'd have meetings, quite a few meetings.
How did you get the position of paid organizer? Did people elect you to that, or? And how did that process happen? People decided?
I was elected through the Fishermen's Union.
Right.
I was elected through the Fishermen's Union to be the organizer.
And did you have the respect of the people on the shop floor?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Right. They all respected me very highly.
How did the employers react to the organizing drive when it began within the canneries? Did they harassed you? Did they harass other people in the union? And did they try and blacklist people? Or?
Well, you'd have to watch yourself on the job. They were very strict there. They watched every move they could just to put you on the job, you know, mm-hmm. so they could fire you in that in case you did anything. Right. Your foreman, your charge hand. All you had to do was to say something on the job and you was off. You had to watch that.
So union people had to be really careful?
Yeah, I had to jump from the cannery into the fresh fish to organize the people. And they were watching every move I made. I had to watch. I used to sneak around and outside and then going through the other part and organize so-and-so when I knew he wanted to sign up.
And when you were an organizer, how did you arrange that in terms of work so that you didn't lose your job?
Oh, when I went for a paid organizer, the business agent went to speak to the company and told him that I was going to work for the union and I was going to be a chief shop steward and I'd have to go to the plant and sign up the people. He says, that's the only way we'll get our people organized. Mm-hmm. And he says, we'd like to have Eva take a leave of absence. He says, how long? Well, he says, it all depends how long she'll be on the job.
Right.
So fine and dandy. Then I was on there for about 4 or 5 years when they forgot to put my name in as a leave of absence. I lost 10 years seniority there.
So you
when
had
I went back to the plant.
So you had to go back without seniority? And
no, I had, you see, I had quite a bit of seniority. They just took 10 years off from me. I had to go down the line and then work myself up.
Was one of the reasons that they, the employers would not victimize people who were pro-union, that was one of the reasons that there were shop stewards on the plant floor who could...
If things went wrong, you had a shop steward on every job. So in case something would happen, the shop steward would know just what was happening, and then she'd take it up right away.
Right. So how...